Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell.
Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The story behind the song is back for season four. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up, and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by SoundMind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. And guess what? You don't have to die at the hands of a shape-shifting clown to join. No, all you have to do is tune in every Friday as us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. Each week, we'll either spend hours reading between the pages of one of his books or chew on his latest tweets and Hollywood headlines. What's more, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Mick Garris, Jerry O'Connell, Mary Lambert, Will Wheaton, and the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound and the Consequence Podcast Network. Take a second before we get started, wherever you're listening from right now, to hit the subscribe button. And that means if you're checking us out on YouTube, wherever you get your favorite podcasts from, or if you're listening on Spotify, you can hit follow along there as well. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, John McCauley from the band Deer Tick. They've just announced a compilation called Mayonnaise, sort of a companion to their last two records, Volume 1 and 2, which takes some alternate tunes from those two records, as well as four new songs and some covers from bands like the Velvet Underground, the Pogues, George Harrison, and Ben Vaughn. And speaking of covers, we're going to talk about John fronting the band Nirvana, both in the Deer Tick version, Deervana, and as well as actually fronting Nirvana during their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction and the recent Cal Jam. There's also some discussions on what it's like to be a band like Deer Tick playing in festivals in the middle of the day, their upcoming work for an unannounced documentary, and his home studio that he's just built. It's Kyle Meredith with Deer Tick.
Hi, this is John McCauley.
Well, first off, so the new record is Mayonnaise.
which is automatically a fun title, if anything. Following the condiments theme of late, is that right?
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever be able to break free from this trend now. It's too much fun.
I see the video, and there you are, all dressed, you know, in the condiment costumes and whatnot. And I'm thinking, like, how timely with the Kanye SNL thing, you know, having happened just a few weeks ago. Something in the zeitgeist, or just a nice coincidence?
I don't watch much TV, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, he came out on SNL, and he was dressed as the Perrier bottle, and one of his cohorts was also dressed in something like, and they did the entire video to it.
Oh, he might be in the midst of some kind of crisis, from what I understand.
Well, anyway, there happens to be something about the condiments in the air right now. So, for what it's worth, I guess.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Now. Yeah. I guess there were a couple Instagram comments that went over my head, but now they make sense.
Well, on to more serious subjects with this record, anyway. So this it's not an album, or would you say it is? I guess it's being touted as more of a compilation, right?
Yeah. It's just we recorded a couple of new songs and some covers for it. We had a lot of material left over from volumes 1 and 2, including some alternate versions of songs that from the sessions we did before we ended up recording volume 1 and 2. We ended up kind of scrapping everything, but there were a few cool early versions of songs in there that we thought might be worth putting out. And it's just kind of a mixed bag of Deer Tick stuff from the past few years, but it flows pretty nicely together. It doesn't sound, there's not too many drastic changes in sound quality or anything between songs. It's pretty cohesive. But I wouldn't call it anything other than a compilation, though.
Gotcha.
That's really what it is.
I was thinking of those alternate versions and researching this interview at the same time that the new Dylan bootleg just came out with, you know, More Blood, More Tracks. And, there's a guy who's famous for doing just, you know, so many different versions of one song. And I don't, that
yeah,
sort of blows
you're me. Ian goes to see Bob Dylan every chance that he gets. He's one of the biggest Dylan fans that I know. And unless you're a really hardcore Dylan fanatic, like my bandmate Ian, I think he might not be able to figure out what song he's playing until about halfway through it.
That's true, but you know, as a songwriter though, when you do those, because I don't know that every songwriter does that, and I don't know to what extent how often you all do that, you know, different versions, alternate versions, or whatever of a song, but in the end, I don't know, it almost seems like choosing, you know, which path on a road, left or right, is going to be the right one. Like, which one of these best represents our artistic vision? Is that what it is?
No, with the couple of alternate versions that we put on Mayonnaise, they were there's two songs from Volume 1, two that I think were kind of overlooked. They don't really get mentioned much or requested at shows. And Volume 1 being the acoustic album, the early versions of them were electric and maybe a little bit more, I don't know, they were just different than what we ended up releasing. And they were different enough that, you know, I thought it was interesting. And I just wanted to show that, you know, we did struggle with figuring out
right.
Where to place some of the songs on Volumes 1 and 2, because many of the songs could have been interpreted either as an acoustic song or an electric song.
Now then, you've also got the new songs on there are like, you know, we hear Hey Ya now. Are these all recently written songs, or had they been around for a while as well and just unreleased?
No, those are recent. That was when we went in to record the covers. While we were in the studio, we thought, you know, hey, we're all here. Why don't we write a couple new songs together, and maybe we'll like them enough to put them out.
Where does that first single come from? Is there any cool story behind Hey Ya?
That little riff on the really low tuned guitar was just something that I was always playing at sound checks and stuff. It was just this thing that I guess it's like my sweet child of mine. Like the intro is just like Slash's warm up, you know. And then Axl was like, "Hey, we gotta turn that into a song."
Well, it worked out well for him, so it's. I
yeah,
love this
I
song too.
I don't know. We'll have quite the amount of success of that song.
It's a fun song, though. It compliments, you know, right there. It's kind of one of those. I mean, we're big fans of Deer Tick anyway. I think we played just about everything you guys have ever put out. So, you know, this is no different from
Thank
that one.
Very
but,
much.
Yeah, but it's a seriously fun song and you know, sort of what makes this compilation its own thing too. And you talk about the covers it being the third part of this. You know, there's the alternate tunes, there's the new songs, and there's also the covers. I see we've got covers from the Velvet Undergrounds, the Pogues, George Harrison. That one's out there right now. And then there's another fella, Ben Vaughn, who I guess he's been around for a while. This is the one I wasn't familiar with, though. What's his story?
Yeah, well, I first got turned on to his music from that album, Cubist Blues, with Alex Chilton and Alan Vega. Ben's the third part of that album that, you know, his name's on the record cover, but nobody ever really talks about his contribution to that pretty amazing album. So I just started, you know, looking up his music, and, you know, I saw that Marshall Crenshaw had recorded one of his songs, and, you know, it seemed like he had a bit of success as a songwriter and touring musician in, you know, the 80s. I don't know, I got really into his catalog, and yeah, I love that Too Sensitive for This World song that we covered. I started singing that, actually, just down the road from my house. My friend Jeff, who passed away, owned this record store down in the corner, and we shared our love of Ben Vaughn's music was something that we had, you know, we were both really intense about, and when he passed away, I played that song at his memorial service, and then a month later, another friend of mine passed away, and the song just kind of stuck with me, and we made it both of our live show for a while there. And yeah, Ben's a great writer. He's a great guy. We've become friends recently. And he's just the sweetest dude. And he has a great radio show. I think it started on XPN in Philly. Mm-hmm. And now it's nationally syndicated. It's called The Many Moods of Ben Vaughn. It's like an hour long, and it's just a really cool mixed playlist. He plays all sorts of stuff.
And what a great way to keep the friends that you've lost kind of top of mind, you know, as that song now has its own place, you know, his own recorded place too.
Yeah, that song, you know, kind of helped me move along with my life, you know, and, you know, it was a pretty rough couple months, and that song helps me a lot.
You'd done an interview, I guess, recently, and you were talking about the covers, and I think the line that jumped out at me is you said you were obsessed with learning other people's songs. Like that's sort of been one of the things. Do you find that there's any reason for that? Like, you know, I've been thinking, like, I remember a long time ago reading something from Rivers from Weezer, and he would say he would learn other people's songs so he could learn how to deconstruct them to get the mathematics out of them. And of course, I don't sense that that's what you're getting at here, but I didn't know if there was sort of a reason why, as you put it, you obsessed with learning other people's songs.
Yeah, I just think it's fun to follow in other guitarists and other singers' footsteps and, you know, to try to recreate something to put your own spin on it. I don't know, it's just fun for me. It's like, you know, I, with every song that I learn, you know, I can always take something from it that I can apply to my own music in some way, whether it's some maneuver on the guitar that never occurred to me before, or just realizing that, hey, I like singing in this key, you know? I mean, I always wanted to be in a band, but I think before that became the obsession, I just wanted to have fun and play songs that I loved, you know? So it's just kind of like, you know, I still want to be the kid in the garage just playing cover songs with his friends after school, you know, in a way.
Probably a nice little seg here to the other thing that you've done lately, which is playing cover songs in a sense, but it's not just playing cover songs. And I'm talking about fronting Nirvana. And I'll put that two words in quotes, fronting Nirvana.
Oh.
Because as far as playing cover songs goes, I don't know that you can beat that right there.
I had a pretty good band behind me for that.
Yeah. You know, to paint this picture a little bit, you know, so Cal Jam, the Foo Fighters Festival, happens a few weeks ago, and this is not the first time, but you know, there was a mini Nirvana reunion, as much as they can, and you and Joan Jett got up there and reprised your roles from what you had done at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, I think Dave had been planning it for a while, in his head at least, but I didn't hear anything about it until about, I don't know, maybe 4 days before.
Wow!
Yeah, it's hard to talk about it. I was kind of just in shock the whole time. It was really an honor to do it. I mean, Nirvana was and still is, you know, one of my favorite bands. I don't know that their couple of records, that was my Bible for my teenage years.
Yeah.
So it was really heavy stuff, you know, and just seeing how, you know, you could see that it was bringing up a lot of mixed emotions for Dave and Chris. You know, when we were rehearsing the songs earlier that day, I just felt, I don't know, being in the middle of that, it's really a really special place, and, you know, something I'll never forget.
And for anyone who doesn't know, of course, Deer Tick has its history with it's Deervana. Is that what you called it? Your own tribute version, right? And that goes back how long?
I don't know. Maybe we haven't done one. We haven't done a Deervana show in 5 years, I don't think. But it was maybe 7 or 8 years ago. A friend of ours in Providence is a promoter. His name's Mike, and he does all our shows up there. He was throwing himself a birthday party at one of the clubs that he books, and he came up with the idea of Nirvana. Like, will you guys come play my birthday party and do a set of Nirvana songs? Because I think he was at a show where we covered Breed or something like that. And it was really fun. We just did it, you know, we thought it would just be that one time. And then somebody heard that we did it, or some YouTube videos or whatever, and then people started asking us to play shows as Nirvana. And we did one at South by Southwest because we thought it'd be really funny, because it kind of completely goes against the idea of South by Southwest,
right?
You know? Like an already established band coming in and playing a set full of cover songs. It's just kind of, you know. So we did that, and that ended up being kind of a high-profile gig. And then we just started getting ridiculous offers from people to play shows as Nirvana, and they were offering more money than Dick had ever gotten paid at a show. So that's when we decided to put it to rest and stop doing that.
Once the money starts coming in, now it's time to stop. Yeah,
it started to feel wrong.
But then that's the jump. So and eventually there you are, you know, in place of Kurt Cobain himself. And as you're talking about, you know, being in that circle when they're connecting, you know, they're reliving all of that, and you just happen to be, in one sense, the bystander, you know, that's privy to this. I mean, I don't know. Is there a point where you have to kind of shut down the whole I'm a fan first and go totally pro on it? Are you even able to do that in that sense?
At no point did I want my inner fan to take over. So, I mean, I don't know. When you're, you know, Chris and Dave and Pat are just really, they're really sweet guys, and they're completely normal, mm-hmm. the people as far as rock and rollers go, you know? I mean, you know, I felt very comfortable with them. They didn't, I don't know, there's nothing strange about them. You know, they didn't seem otherworldly or like, I don't know, anything that would, I don't know, it's just playing music with a couple of guys.
That's interesting because, you know, I had Joan Jett on my show just a couple of weeks ago too, and it's so funny how similar the things you're saying about them are, you know, just how down to earth and how at ease, you know, they can make another artist, you know, but especially in a situation like that, I think that's what's the most interesting about it. You know, and it was, as a fan, it was fun to watch though. I mean, to see both of you all up there doing it, you both did the song so much great service, you know, and to bring them to life when people have just wanted that for so long. And I think, you know, Grohl has gone to say that, you know, I don't think he by no means means to take this out on a world tour or anything, but these might happen more so or something like that. And I don't know. I mean, are you still ready for that call? Is this something that you'll step in on whenever you're asked to, or is this, have you had your moments?
I'd love to play with them again. I mean, what I've learned is that when Dave Grohl sends you an email, you must respond to it.
You must. Aside from that, with that last record, and I'm going to stick because Cal, this is the seg, is the Cal Jam being a festival, and have you all probably playing multiple festivals as bands do these days over the last summer. There was a song on this, on Volume 1 and 2 called SMF, and I was wondering if you got to play that directly at any festivals this year.
We did. I don't think we played it at Cal Jam. We played it at Hardly Strictly Bluegrass in San Francisco. I think they did a Newport Folk. I don't know. It's a fun and funny song to play at festivals, and it's usually not directed at whatever festival we're playing, but playing festivals is funny. It's really not the ideal situation for bands like us, you know, like a 45-minute set in the middle of the day. That's not that fun.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. No, my favorite, you know, some of my favorite Deer Tick concerts, and I think I've seen a lot of them, but I think when you really especially look at those early days, I couldn't have imagined any of those sets in the middle of the day with the sun out in the heat. I don't know how that would have worked out.
Yeah, we did some very, I don't know, we used to play for a long time and drink way too many beers while we played, and it was such a blast.
But it's different these days, right? I mean, the amount of alcohol, I think, has receded, I guess. Is that the right way to put it?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I mostly stick to Miller Lite these days. But, it's still a part of our thing. I mean, we're kind of, Deer Tick is synonymous with beer. But, yeah, I was actually thinking of this one show. I don't know why I was thinking about it yesterday. It was a fun show we played in Santa Fe a long time ago. We had a 45-minute set. We were opening for somebody. And in that 45 minutes between the four of us, we drank 24 beers. We completely emptied a case of beer in 45 minutes. It was like, you know, in between each song, drink an entire beer and then play the next one. I don't know how he pulled it off sometimes.
Human feats right there. This is the first time I ever saw you was at Headliners here in Louisville. And, Them Darlings, I think, was also on the bill with you all. And it was a total, I don't think anyone was actually standing by the end of it. And I say that band or crowd, you know, but somehow people were upright. And, it's fun. It was a great show. They always are.
Thanks.
I did read about a couple things, and I'll close up here with that. I don't know if you can talk about it or not, but you said you guys were probably going to be doing music for an upcoming film?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know how much I can talk about it, but it's a documentary. And, yeah, they were going to use some of our songs in it anyway, and then they just asked us if we would score it too. So we're going to start work on that in January. And, hopefully you'll hear about it sooner than later.
Yeah. Have you ever scored before? It seems like this would be quite different if you haven't before.
Not really. I did a little bit of work for a documentary called Oxiana, but I didn't score it in any sort of traditional way. I just kind of, you know, sat down with my guitar and played along to the movie as I watched it, you know.
Yeah.
Just kind of improvised. But, yeah, we're going to try to do it a little bit more in a traditional sense with this documentary.
I can't wait to hear how that comes out. And how's the home studio coming along?
Actually, my wife is in there right now rehearsing for her the show she's doing next month. So it's functioning.
It's functioning. I know that. I mean, that's a major thing right there for any artist to be able to set up really one of those and make it work for them. So hats off to you on that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I never paid much attention to what was going on while we were recording, so I didn't really pick up much in all my time in recording studios. So this is all new to me, and it's a pretty involved thing.
Well, man, good luck with that. And again, we'll be looking forward to the official release of Mayonnaise, which is in February, correct?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to me again today. I really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll see you back down here in Louisville sooner than later.
Of course. Take care.
All right, you too. We'll see you around. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks to John McCauley from Deer Tick. Again, that record will be out in February. It's called Mayonnaise. If you haven't already, take that moment to hit the subscribe button right now, whether you're listening on YouTube, checking us out on Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcast from, you can subscribe there as well. After that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.